Didn't you just say he's? I didn't say he was going to die. I said, had he prepared to die? So again, but he's hoping he gets to see the Philippians again. But since he's not with the Philippians, since he's in jail, he wants to send Timothy. Now remember, we have the church being established at Philippi in what chapter in the book of Acts? Acts 16. In Acts 16, Timothy was there with him as he started the church there at that occasion. But we look at Timothy here. I don't think the character of Timothy came about by chance. All right, if you go in that little box there, below verse 19, let's go ahead. Kirk, you want to read that box for me, please?
Timothy, he was raised by a godly mother and grandmother, 2 Timothy 1:5. From a childhood, Timothy knew scriptures, 2 Timothy 3:15. Timothy was well spoken of by brethren at Lystra and Iconium, in Acts 16:2. Timothy's concern is in Philippians 2:20 through 21, and Timothy's proven character is in Philippians 2:22.
And again, there's other places we could go to, but here we have Timothy. We would say he's got a track record. A track record for what? Being a child of God, being a Christian. It started out, and it's really sad because we know nothing about Timothy's dad except he wasn't a Jew. He was Greek. But we do learn about Timothy's mom and grandmother. And what do we know about Lois and Eunice? They were godly individuals, were they not? The influence of Lois and Eunice. And again, there goes now, again, Timothy still had to do it himself, but he had the influence of Lois and Eunice. And when it says Timothy knew, oh, did you have your hand up? When it says Timothy knew the scriptures from his youth, what scriptures would have been talking about? The Old Testament scriptures, because the New Testament wasn't in effect yet. But the Old Testament prophesied of the coming of who? The Christ, the Son of God. So you had that in the Old Testament. So you had these situations. Those of us that have been fortunate enough to have been parents or are still having children at home and still parents, it's an awesome and sometimes wearisome task. Would you agree or disagree? And I don't think there's a parent in this audience, and including myself for sure, that you've done 100% right. If you did, I'll sit down and let you talk. But we do have the right standard, do we not? And that's the scriptures. But one of the things with you who have children still at home or with you who might be grandparents, your example matters. Your example matters. And that's, you know, if they, do you know of people, and I don't want names of people, but do you know of brethren who, when they leave the collective assemblies, they've got nothing good to say about the church? Raise your hand if you've known anybody like that. How do you think that's going to affect children if there's children in that situation? Good or bad? Now, I'm not saying we can't deal with the problems, and children should learn that there are problems with the church, and this is how you handle it. But I've known of some people that anytime they got out of the assembly, they had nothing good to say about the church. Well, why shouldn't I be surprised that if they have children, guess what they're not going to do? They're not going to be a part of the church, or if they are, as soon as they turn 19, 20, 21, they're going to go off into left field. So again, your example and your teaching matters. Now, whether you have devotionals, whether you have home studies, all of that is good. But above and beyond that is for them to see it in you. That's the most important thing, correct?
My daddy, he read his Bible every day. Every evening he studied the Bible.
Now, I want to add this to the factor. We're not going to talk about raising children because that's many studies. But there are some parents who, would you agree with me, it appears to be they live the good example. And maybe they had two or three kids, and out of the three, two of them were faithful, or one, and two were not, or one was not. And then I see those parents beat themselves up over it. You got to be careful there, too. Yeah, there you go. We all have free will. So hopefully they are fortified as a child growing up that they can withstand what comes their way, and you have a part in that. I remember when my children were going to public school, and the last school they were in, the last high school they were in, was a pretty rough school. There was gangs in that school, and I know my son got confronted by one, but he stood firm, and I won't go into details. But the situation is I was grateful for them because they remained faithful. They remained faithful. When my daughter went off to college, first 2 years she stayed home. I love that because you still have your stamp of approval, you know, your thumbprint on them. But then when she went down to Ball State, I was proud of her because I could see her faith. But I've known some very close people who have been very dedicated Christians, and one of their children just jumped the fence. And they beat themselves up over it because, and it goes back to the free will. Sometimes you just have some kids that just go the other way. Now, on the whole, I think if they're trained right, you're going to have better situation that they're going to do right. But that's not 100% guarantee. So if you have those you know who have someone that's gone astray, I always pray they come back to do what's right. As long as they have a breath of life, let's hope they come back and do what's right. But I hate to see a parent beat themselves up. Now, did they make mistakes? Probably. Did you make mistakes? Probably. Did I make mistakes? But my kids overcame that, and they're still faithful. Now, I say still, time goes on. We're held. Remember Philippians 2:12. What does that say? If you don't know it, look it up. Philippians 2:12. Work out your own salvation. Okay. And that's what, you know, you need to teach your kids and grandkids. You know, that you're going to set the pattern for them. You're going to be the example for them. You're going to do whatever you can to help them to do that which is right. But bottom line, as they get up out of the household, goes back to that free will thing, does it not? I wished my grandchildren, and now I've got one who's 20, one who's coming close to being 20, one who's getting in high school. I wish they could have had, I could have kept them from the ages of 11 and younger. You know why? Because then I had complete control when I had them. Now, like my wife tells me, they've got their own mind. They never tell me that, but my wife tells me that when her and I are different. I've got my own mind. Well, okay, you've got your own mind, and make sure your mind is in harmony with God's mind. That's the thing. So I will always love my children. I will always love my grandchildren. That's unequivocal. What I have to be careful of, looking at it from the other angle, God forbid that one or more of them were to go astray. I don't even like using this illustration. But if that was the case, I hope my love for the Lord would be greater than my love for them. What do I mean by that? Don't try to justify if they're doing that which is wrong. And you know, and I'm not saying it's right, but that's easier said than done. Now, I had a good friend, I may have told you this. He was a dedicated Christian. His wife was a dedicated Christian. One of their children, as they grew up, went off into left field. She became a lesbian. Now, I know she didn't learn that in her home. I know that she went that direction after she got out of the home. What I admire about this brother, when I went there to hold a meeting, He said, if you got that topic under consideration, he said, you need to preach it. I was amazed, because what would have been really easy to say, you know what, just kind of avoid that topic. He continued faithfully. His wife continued faithfully. Long story short of that story, about 7-8 years later, she came back to the truth. Now, I'm not saying that's always going to happen. But what if they would have condoned her actions? What if they would have said, well, you know, times are different now. Who knows if she would have ever come back? Now, they still loved her. I don't know what degree of association they had with her. But in no uncertain terms did she know for sure her parents did not approve of that lifestyle. And she came back. How I know that, because I went to hold a meeting where she was. It kind of floored me. You know how you take a step back and go, whoa, and I had to talk to the local preacher. And she had come back, and she's very faithful. But that's because the parents, at least a part of it, the parents stayed true to Christ. And it's very easy when someone goes astray, especially if it be someone close to you. It's funny, when we look at someone else and they go astray, it's a sin. When we look at someone close to us, it's a mistake. Wait a minute. If it was a sin to someone who's not close to us, and it's someone close to me and it's the same thing, guess what it is? It's a sin. Now, I went off gear a little bit, but Timothy had a good background. But Timothy also had proven character. What does it mean to have proven character? I'm giving the floor. Yeah, okay, go, Daryl. Yeah.
They knew what kind of character he had. They observed him at the time that they were in Philippi working, and I'm sure they heard as he's traveled on word of him. And so it's we see it all the time with brethren, that know me and believe. I'll get phone calls from them once in a while or a text from them saying, such and such is coming to Belize and he's asked to speak to the congregation. Do you know him? Trust me, and I'm going to tell him either, no, I've never heard of him before, or you can't trust him, or you can't trust him, or, you know, whatever. But you know, we all use resources of people that we trust.
And I like what you said to begin with. It's proven character. He's been in circumstances, and he's withstood the test in those circumstances. You know, there are some Christians who talk a good game. Until when? Until they're tested. Until they're tested. And then lo and behold, when they're tested, you look back and where'd they go? They're not there. He's got proven character. He was tested more than once. And so Paul had complete confidence in him. In fact, where he came from, they had complete confidence. And if you go back to the early part of Acts chapter 16. So, you know, young people. Oh, and I love young people, but I'm not. I can't say I fit in with them because I'm not. I'm old. But young people have high ideals, and they tend to speak before they think sometimes. For instance, I used to have some young people say, well, I want to be respected. My response to them, then you got to earn it. If you want to be respected, you need to earn it. Just because you turn 17, 18, 20, 21 doesn't mean that you got to that age, you should be respected. I used to use it this way, because my young people, when they first get their car, you know, they get their driver's license, I would tell them, okay, you want to be respected? Don't be spinning the wheels out in the driveway. That's not going to get you respect. Don't be doing donuts. That's not going to get you respect. That's going to show that you're foolish. That's going to show you don't understand. You're going to pay, you're losing rubber on that tire, and someone's going to have to replace those tires. So again, it's by what you do. And Timothy was respected. In different congregations I've been in, I play a little mind game with myself. And I think, well, if things got rough and we had to doctrinally stand for an issue, and there's only been a couple of times in my life where that happened, who would stand by my side? Now, I've had that happen a couple of times, and I was surprised on a few that didn't stand by your side. Because the way they talked, they were giants. And then you know what? That giant became a not giant when you had to stand for the truth. Now, I hope we don't have that problems here, but I say this. Anyone can talk a good game. Timothy didn't talk a good game. He had proven character. And that's what you and I need to have. That, and you start teaching your children proven character when they're young. If you say you're going to do something, guess what? You're going to do it. Well, something better came up. Doesn't matter. If you made a commitment to do something, then you're going to do it. Do you agree or disagree? You see, if we say, well, yeah, you made a commitment to do this, but since something better came up, you go and do it. Guess what? They'll do that their whole life then. No. I mean, they get used to that. I had a friend in Illinois. His son, who was an adult at the time, got arrested for drunken driving. He called me up. He was looking for bail money. I told him, I said, I'm sorry, I can't give you any bail money. I said, I know I'm not in your situation, but he's there where he belongs because of what he's done. By you just kind of trying to undo the situation with money is not going to be the solution to that situation. Oh, and by the way, it wasn't. He got the money, but that didn't solve the problem. So again, proven character. You know, you must not love your children. I love my children. But I want my children to obey the Lord. And I want them to have proven character. If they say they're going to do something, then what? Then do it. You're going to make a commitment for a bill, then pay it. Now, I know there are situations, so before you even bring it up, I know there can be hardship cases where sickness comes in or something else comes in and someone goes bankrupt. I understand that. There can be a legitimate case from time to time where that occurs. But quite frankly, a lot of it is people never learn to stick to their commitment. You know what? If I sign up, hey, I like this, and by the way, I've looked at trucks. I'm not getting a truck. I'm not getting a car. I just got everything. My wife would choke me if I came home and said, I've got a new truck that only costs $47,000. And you know what? You can sign the line. Oh, how many months' payments, Chuck? Oh, only 72. I probably won't even be around here for 72 months. You see, and if we teach our kids that you can sign, how many credit cards are things to get credit in the mail do you get? I mean, if you took all of them, you'd be in debt within 6 months that you couldn't come out of. Because that's what credit does. So again, what I'm saying, my kids, I said, okay, when you sign something, remember, you got to pay for it. You know, it sounds good and it looks new and this looks great, but if you've made a commitment to this, you've got to pay for this. Now, are there circumstances that sometime can override? Few and far between, yes. But generally speaking, what we have is a society of people signing for a bunch of things and then let others bail them out. I have a relative, I won't go into detail, I think they've been in bankruptcy 2 times. Shame on them. Perhaps, maybe the first time was legitimate, but you couldn't figure it out after that time? You say, well, what about medical? Well, when I had my heart attack, we had great insurance, and I'm not going to tell you what we owed because it's really none of your business, and I'm not going to cry poor mouth, but we had a portion we had to pay. I went to the hospital. I said, listen, I can't pay this off at once But if you work with me, I will get it paid off. And you know what? They were real good about it. And we got it paid off. Our portion. Like I said, I had wonderful insurance that paid over 90% of it because the bill was astronomical. But the point is, when you have responsibilities, you go to them and say, here's what I can do. You don't just say, well, I can't pay it, so you know what, just let them sue me. That's the wrong attitude. That's the wrong, isn't it? Oh, by the way, that attitude rubs off into the church. And that's why we have sometimes people who are what I call fair-weather Christians. They're around as long as things are what? Doing well. But any church, including this, sometimes we're not doing well because we have human beings. Sometimes we lock horns. That's it. I quit. I'm going somewhere else. Guess what? They're human beings too. And sometime down the road, they're going to lock horns. What are you going to do with that? Well, I'm going to go another. And the trouble thing in Florida, you have too many congregations. When you were up in Illinois, you didn't have that many. When you're up in Minnesota, you had hardly none. So again, you were kind of stuck. But down here, you know, you can jump to this one or jump to that one or jump to this one. And I'm not saying you can't switch congregations. But I'm saying, does that happen because people get disgruntled? Because if you find a church on this earth that has absolutely no problems, then you've died and gone on to heaven. Because now I'm not justifying problems, and we're fortunate here. The elders and deacons are doing a great job. But even them, they can't control some of the things. But if you don't have the mindset to stick to it, that's what's going to happen. Divorce. You have divorce because young people aren't told, hey, listen, when you say I do, you've what? You've done did it. With one exception. But who gets married with the exception? Well, I'm going to marry that person, but they're going to cheat on me. Then you shouldn't marry them. If you think they're unfaithful, they're going to cheat on you, stay away from them. But all marriages have ups and downs. And you might say, oh, I've had someone say, well, we've never had an argument. Well, then one of the partners ready to bust. Because I've never seen two people always get along. Especially if, true? So someone's just constantly giving in, and sometimes they're going to be like that teapot, and they're going to explode. But when you've got the commitment, we're going to stick with it. We're going to deal with these situations. We're going to deal with that. We're going to deal with this. We're going to deal, Chuck, with your idiosyncrasies, and we're going to get through this. When my wife married me, she didn't think she was marrying someone who's going to be a preacher. I wasn't even that religious when we got married. And like I said, she didn't want to buy the first house. Our first house we were going to get at 20 years old. It was too far away from the family. It was 15 miles away from the family. So we didn't get the house. And then a couple, 2.5 years later, I learned the truth. I obeyed the gospel. I studied. And we're in Minnesota. 400 miles away from her family. And then from Minnesota, to warm up, I came to Florida for 7 years. 1,200 miles away from the family. Love her dearly. She didn't say, oh, that's it. I didn't think this was going to come. We stuck together. I'm grateful for we did because she's helped me immensely. Whether it be marriage, whether it be God's spiritual family, you've got to have the situation that Timothy had, proven character. Too many people give up all the time, do they not? That if I can't get this, I'm surprised anybody rides a bicycle anymore. Do you remember when you first rode your bicycle? How many of you fell down when you rode your first bicycle? Good. That's the way I like. I was worried there's going to be some here that, no, I never fell down. Well, you're unique. I fell down so many times, I decided to ride my bicycle in my aunt's backyard because it was easier falling on the grass than it was the street. But finally, I learned how to ride a bicycle. But you get back up. This little beautiful little girl here, she doesn't walk yet. When she learns to walk, is she going to fall down? Yeah. But what's she going to do? Get back up. You know why? Because she don't have the attitude of a lot of adults. Well, if it don't go just right, that's it. I'm done. We'd have a society of people who could never walk. You get my point? Proven character. Your character is proven not when things are going good. Your character is proven when? When the test comes. And it tells in Peter and other places, the test will come, will it not? All right, anybody else want to talk about that before we go on? And again, another thing about Timothy, he goes back to Philippians chapter 2, verse 4. He's concerned about their estate, concerned about them. Remember chapter 1. What was Paul dealing with some on chapter 1? Does anybody remember? You had those who are preaching out of sincerity, and you had others who were preaching basically out of jealousy. The truth was being preached, but which one's doing it the right way? The one who are sincere, right? Again, this is the Lord's family. We are a part of the Lord's family. We should be concerned about one another. You go to Corinthians. Good example of that, they weren't concerned about one another. Corinthians amazes me because you have the greatest chapter of love in 1 Corinthians 13. And you got a congregation that shows a lack of love in 1 Corinthians over and over and over again. In fact, they were taking one another to court. They were suing one another, taking one another to court. They were boasting because they had the gift of tongues and others didn't. So they didn't use the tongues for the right way. They were using the tongues, hey, look at me, look at what I can do. And yet, the 13th chapter, he teaches them about love. So again, here we have it. We need to be concerned about one another. Now, when I say being concerned about one another, I'm not saying just let everybody do what they want. I'm saying help one another go to heaven. Right? Is it easy to correct somebody? No, not at all. Even if you have all the facts and all the evidence and the scriptures to back you behind it, it's not easy to do. But is it the right thing to do? Save their soul if they respond. Yeah. So again, we're God's family. We need to encourage, help, uplift, and there's times we need to correct one another so that we can, and I believe that's what Timothy would be willing to do. So anybody else want to talk about Timothy? All right. Oh, yes, Bill. Bill. I'm changing names again. You got a new name, Daryl.
Just one thing, going back to character. I know what you meant by the character comes when the test comes, but character is, proven character is all the time. And the reason I bring that up is I know people that work so, when things aren't going well, they work so hard and you see it and they're so impressive. And then a year later, they're right back in the same place because things started going well.
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Good point. And I'm glad you brought that up because that is the other side of the coin. It's not just when a negative experience. So glad you brought that point up. Does everybody understood what he said then? Because we can't get careless when things are going good either. All right, let's look at that last section, Epaphroditus chapter 2, 25 through 30. Epaphroditus 2, 25 through 30. Let's see. I haven't had, Linda, do you want to read that? I haven't had you read for a long time. 25 through 30.
Thank you. so that when you see him again, you may rejoice, and I may be less concerned about you. Receive him then in the Lord with all joy, and hold men like him in high regard, because he came close to death for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was done deficient in your service to me.
Okay, so all I have in verse 30, and see, we go to start there. He came close to death and regarding his life. What all that entails, God has chosen not to tell us. So we can speculate all night on that, and we're not going to get any further than what that passage says. Okay. But I'm just saying, because if any of you who use commentaries, you'll go in the commentary and you'll wade through all this stuff. That's just their opinion. It may be right. It may not be right. What is right, he was close to death. That's right, because I can give book, chapter, and verse for doing work for them. He's also a fellow soldier and a fellow laborer with Paul. That's good company, isn't it? So did Paul have high regard for him? In fact, we find as we look at Epaphroditus, he was upset because he didn't want the brethren at Philippi to worry about him. Would you agree with me that that's the case? He didn't want them to worry about him. So he wanted to get back to them and let them know that things were okay. And also, as we look at him, look at verse 29. Hold such men in esteem. We need to be careful who we hold in esteem. And what I suggest, we need to hold those who are godly in esteem. I like sports, as you well know. I especially like college football. A lot of great players. I respect their abilities because it's not all just by chance. A lot of them have some super abilities. But there's very few, and because I don't know most of them, I can't think of a bunch of people I hold in esteem that are in athletics. I respect their athletic ability, but then I see things in their life after that kind of brings it down. What happens in our society, we hold the wrong people in esteem. I can respect someone for the work that they do in something. Would you agree with me? But I may not be able to hold them in esteem because they don't have the character that they need to have. Case in point, this is selfishly, I come out of Chicago. In my opinion, the greatest basketball player that ever played was Michael Jordan. To me, hands down. Used to be Larry Bird, but no, it's Michael Jordan. I respect that man's ability and his athleticism on what he did on a basketball court for all those years. And I love the show 30-30 did a profile on. I watched the whole thing, and I appreciate a lot. But there's things about him. I don't hold him in esteem. I'm not saying he's a bad person, but I don't hold him in esteem. Do I think he's the greatest or one of the greatest basketball players ever lived? Absolutely. Is he perhaps a good man? He might be. He might be. I'm not trying to discredit him. But some of the things I saw on different snippets on him, it's not something, because one of the things he had difficulty with, and we all have things we've got to, was gambling. That was an issue he had to deal with. Whether he ever dealt with it or not, I don't know, because he had so much money, he could do things like that. And again, so do you see the difference between respecting what someone does in comparison to holding them in esteem? Yes or no? So what we want to do is be the type of people that can be held in esteem. A preacher could be a great preacher, but as you get to know him, you might not hold him in esteem because perhaps he's arrogant. Perhaps he's off-standish. Perhaps he's self-boasting. You know, I'm not saying all prayer, but I'm just saying he could be one of the greatest preachers that ever preaches. And in fact, I know of one like that, and I'm not going to tell you his name, but I don't hold him in esteem. Do I respect what he can do? Absolutely. Would I go hear him preach? Absolutely. Do I hold him in esteem? No. Because I know things privately that drops that out. So there's a difference. Live a life that you can be held in esteem. Be ready with the questions next week.